Anyway, okay, so yes, my name is Joel Delroy. I come from Australia, but I live in Berlin. Ich kann auch Deutsch reden, aber ich würde gerne diesen Vortrag auf Englisch machen, mit Ihrer Erlaubnis, bitte. So I'm going to make the presentation in English. So basically, I want to start off by asking how many people here would consider themselves to be freelancers? Okay, that's probably not surprising given the kind of event we're at and the kind of types of jobs that the people at this kind of event would do. But the reality is that more and more people are becoming freelancers across all different types of industries, whether they like it or not. And we're seeing this huge shift towards a freelance workforce. And there are some predictions that up to half of the workforce could be freelance within a decade or so. And that's a really huge transition for society, and we better be ready for it. And luckily, there are some people who are preparing for this. And in different countries around the world, freelancers are getting organized into groups to try and defend their social and political rights and to improve their conditions. And I call this the freelancers' rights movement. And I'm researching about it for a book I'm writing called Independence Unite: Inside the Freelancers' Rights Movement, which should be available for digital release shortly. So I want to give you a bit of an overview today of what I've been researching and what I've been writing about to give you an idea of what's coming. So let's start off with a couple of numbers. This is how many freelancers we know there are currently in the EU. Almost 8.5 million, which make up about 4% of the workforce. Now, in the US, it's a bit higher. It's almost 17 million, and that represents about 10% of the workforce. Now, these figures, I think they're quite unreliable. They are based on information that isn't really complete. The way they do the surveys doesn't really accurately reflect what we know a freelancer to be. And they also don't count part-time freelancers who make up a very significant proportion. So I think these numbers are far underestimated. And this prediction I mentioned earlier comes from a private research firm which believes that by the year 2020, in the United States, up to 50% of the workforce will be independent. So even if that figure is a little off, that's still a very significant shift. All right. So how do we get here? Because if you're a freelancer working in a cafe or a co-working space, you might tend to think that your situation is kind of an accidental confluence of unstoppable factors that are out of your control. But I'd like to argue that it is actually the result of conditions that have been created and they can be improved. So let's step through the reasons that we've ended up with a growing freelance workforce. And the first one, of course, and the most obvious, is technology. Of course, it's possible to work anywhere these days on mobile devices and over wireless networks. And the kinds of jobs we're doing a shifting from manufacturing and production to more knowledge-based and service-based jobs that can be done online. But that's only part of the reason. And the other reasons are a little bit more systematic. First one being ideology. Now, starting in the late 70s and in the early 80s, we saw the arrival, of course, of Margaret Thatcher and Ronald Reagan, who introduced the policies that really focused on creating a society of individuals. And they set about doing this by destroying the power of the trade unions and by setting us on a course to a kind of economy where we're all there by ourselves. And so what I'd like to argue is that the freelancing workforce is actually an ideological project that's been very successful and is carrying on to this day. It's a project to create a gray zone of employment activity that's outside the traditional protections of labor laws. So, of course, this continues today, and I think it's pretty clear to everybody that we're still living in an era of Thatcherism, more so than ever, particularly with the current European economic crisis, where we're seeing currently in Spain, for instance, economists advising the Spanish government that the cure to the problem there is to further deregulate employment and make it easier for people to get fired. Well, employment regulations didn't cause a crisis, poor investment decisions did, but it's coming back now. It's being used as an excuse to again hack away at employment conditions and employment protections that have been there for decades. And it's leading to more people becoming flexible workers or freelancers. So the other factor behind this is of course, relentless drive for corporate profits. Companies are always looking for ways to increase the bottom line. One of the biggest costs on any company's books is labor. It's expensive to employ people. You've got to pay their health and sickness benefits. You've got to pay for their holidays. You've got to pay into their pensions. You've got to pay for a place for them to work and give them equipment. And so it's far cheaper if you can employ a freelancer who you can employ on a short-term basis and you don't have any of those obligations. And if you've got any doubt about the intentionality of this move to a freelance workforce, this is a quote. This comes from Tim Ringo, who's the head of IBM's human capital management. And he was talking about a plan that IBM has and is putting in place to shift from a fixed workforce to one that is in the majority made up of contractors. In fact, what they want to do is replace their fixed workforce with contractors. The same people would have to become contractors and bid against each other for each internal job. Now, he said there will be huge savings. There will be no building costs, no pensions, no healthcare costs, making huge savings. So, I mean, it's a very clear plan to basically find a way to reduce costs and increase profits. So that's how we got here. Technology, ideology, and the corporate drive for more profit. So what's the problem here? Isn't it great being a freelancer? You get to be your own boss. You get to work when and where you like. And if you're highly skilled, you can usually earn more money than you would with a fixed contract. Not always, but that's sometimes the case. Of course, there are downsides. You've got no fixed workflow. You're not really sure what's going to happen month to month. No holidays, no sick pay. You've got to take care of your own pension plans, your own retirement plans. And as far as those good pay rates are concerned, I challenge you to think of a workforce where the predictions are correct and we end up with 50% of the workforce being freelancers, the laws of supply and demand are going to tell us what's going to happen to those good pay rates that you can currently get at the moment. You see, the fear is that we're entering a Hobbesian employment market where each individual is forced to fight against every other, undercutting each other on price, and living without social benefits, the kind of benefits that we've all come to enjoy over the past decades. So this leads me to talk about the freelancers' rights movement, which is a social and political quest to protect and improve the condition of freelancers everywhere. It's a push to make sure that the upsides of freedom and flexibility aren't outweighed by the downsides of uncertainty and high personal costs and downward wage pressure. So it's not actually a single organization. The freelancers movement is more of a kind of distributed anarchic network of small organizations that are all in their own way trying to represent freelancers and improve their conditions. So here's where we can currently see active elements of the freelancers movement. We have a total of 6 countries. We've got Germany, the Netherlands, the UK, Italy, the US, and Spain has just come on board as well recently. So what I want to do is give a little overview of some of these, not all of them, because it would take up too much time, but I'll give you an overview of some of these and explain how they're actually setting up and how they're trying to fight for freelancers. Now, this includes formal organizations, such as associations, and also informal action campaigns, sort of spontaneous actions and online, online campaigns that are trying to bring the rights of freelancers forward. Okay, let's start with the little tour right here in Germany, which is the home to the Verband der Gründer und Selbstständigen in Deutschland. Now, this organization started almost exactly a year ago, and it started in response to a challenge that was thrown down by Ursula von der Leyen, the social affairs minister, who in May last year announced a plan to introduce a retirement tax on the self-employed. She wanted to tax all freelancers between 350 to 400 euros a month, regardless of their income, to pay for their retirement costs. Now, this was lumped together with a whole bunch of other legislative changes, and it might have gone unnoticed because the mainstream media didn't even pick up on this particular element of the plan, except there was one sharp-eyed young man up in Hamburg named Tim Wessels who noticed that this was going on, and he started an online petition against this using the Bundestag's official petition platform. And news of it spread through the freelancing community, particularly because they got some help from the co-working community. Co-working spaces, of course, are locations that freelancers can go and work. And there's a strong network of co-working spaces across Germany. And once they heard about this, they spread it through their networks. And the petition was very successful. It gained the necessary 50,000 signatures. In fact, it got over about 80,000 signatures. Now, as a result of that pressure, and of course, a lot of other factors, this particular plan was dropped from the legislative agenda. But you can be pretty sure that it's going to come back in some form or another in the future because, as we know, Germany's pension system is really broken. Taxing freelancers a monthly flat tax is not the way to fix it. But that's the approach that that the Merkel government was set on. And we can be pretty sure that something similar is going to come back in the future. So to get ready for the next fight, some of the people who are involved in promoting the petition help set up this association. And the idea is to have a plan ready for the next time that the German government comes back with its new revised pension plan. So it's still a very small organization. It's only been around a year. It only has a couple of hundred paying members, but it's growing, particularly through meetups in different cities. So I actually host the meetup in Berlin. We're having one at the end of the month. If anybody here is from Berlin, you should come along. I don't believe we have a very active Köln membership yet, but we're working on that. So that's the German element of the freelancers organization. So let's go over to the US, which is home to one of the oldest and most successful freelance parts of the freelance movements at the moment. It's called the Freelancers Union. It's not actually a union in the traditional sense, but it is an association that lobbies on behalf of its members politically and offers them services. Now, in the US, one of the biggest problems is healthcare, the cost of healthcare. So the Freelancers Union have actually set up their own health insurance company and their own clinics in New York. They also do a lot with really creative graphic design campaigns. They're very clever about the way they use graphic design to capture the attention of the creative people who are freelancers to get them on board. So we've got a lot we can learn from the Freelancers Union. So those are two country-based bodies. There are also a couple of networks that span different countries. There's actually only one. This is it. It's the European Forum of Independent Professionals, or EFIP. It is basically a small committee made up of all the different European bodies. They meet about once every 6 months in a different city. They just discuss tactics and talk about how things are going in their own home countries and talk about how they might be able to cooperate. So they've recently agreed to launch a campaign across Europe called Freelancing Works, which is going to be an awareness campaign to try and get more people to realize that there is a freelancers movement and to get them to take part. I'm going to be coordinating this campaign, and we're looking for people to help out with ideas for everything from strategy to graphic design to implementation. So if this sounds like something you want to get involved with, please come and see me afterwards. So that's a kind of regional coordination effort going on there. Still very in a small stage, but it's happening. All right, so I want to look at now at some more informal actions that are going on outside of the tradition of the kind of organized bodies. There are also spontaneous actions taking place in different countries. This one comes from Belgium. This happened in May, and in a little tiny town called Nemours, which I've never heard of, but it's somewhere outside of Brussels. And a group of, I think there are around 20 or 30 freelancers from this city got angry that they weren't getting enough support from the government. So they actually went out on the streets and they blocked traffic. They blocked one of the major roads of the city for a couple of hours. And they were handing out flyers. And I've got to say, this probably goes down in history as the first time ever that freelancers have taken to the streets in this kind of way. And I think it's fantastic. They weren't organized by any central group. They just got together and said, we've got to get out there and let people know that freelancers aren't being treated well. By the Belgian government. So I found that to be really interesting. That's going on in Belgium. In the UK, there's a big issue with unpaid internships, illegal unpaid internships. It's illegal to have an unpaid intern in the UK, but lots of companies still take them on. And so different groups have started online campaigns to name and shame these companies who are breaking the law. One of them's called the Precarious Workers Brigade. Another one's called Intern Aware. And I've just become familiar with another one called Rag Pickers. And they all do a sort of similar work where they're trying to shame companies or organizations or art institutions that use unpaid interns into stopping that practice and giving back pay to the people who've been affected. And they've actually been very effective. They have been able to get back pay for certain of the people who are affected by this, and they've even been able to get companies to back down on their policies and apologize and stop exploiting unpaid interns. What I like about these campaigns is they make very good use of social media to spread the message and to make themselves appear bigger than they actually are, which is a very good tactic. Here's another little one. This is just a really simple strategy. It's an online action called Who Pays Writers? Very simply, writers go on and they say how much they got paid per job at different media organizations. One of the big problems for freelancers is that they don't have much bargaining power when it comes to determining how much they get paid because they have no idea what the standard rates are. And as anybody who knows anything about economics knows, in a market where you don't have perfect flow of information, you can't arrive at a perfect price. So this is kind of trying to correct that balance by giving the freelancers a bit more knowledge about how much they should be charging for their work. It's very simple, and I think we can see this sort of thing spread across other industries. All right, so there's some official campaigns, organizations, and some unofficial actions. And these all come together in this growing atmosphere where freelancers are starting to shape together to get some kind of voice. So what might this movement actually fight for? I want to move on and talk a bit about what the kind of demands that a freelancers movement might make in the future. Let's start with some really easy ones. Recognition. Now, this sounds really simple, just to get recognition for the fact that freelancers exist. But in a lot of places and a lot of areas of bureaucracy, the idea of the freelancers, we know it, doesn't exist at all. You've got a very old-fashioned mindset where you've got workers, you've got employers, and sometimes you have this category of self-employed, but it's sort of more suited to the doctors and dentists of the world, these sort of well-paid professionals. And it doesn't really take into account the people at the bottom, you know, the graphic designers or the people slogging away month to month. So if you are going to try and access some kind of government service and there's no checkbox for you to tick, you can't access that service. So what we need to argue for is that governments and bureaucracies overhaul the approach they have to the idea of employment and to freelancers and to give them a box to tick. So connected to that is the idea of collecting better statistics. Now, stupid as it might sound, there's very few governments or agencies that actually have any idea how many freelancers there really are. And I told you those numbers at the start are a little bit unreliable because they don't take into account a lot of factors. Well, that's the case, and we need to improve it. Because if you can't count freelancers, then you can't draft policies that accurately affect them. Or even worse, if you don't count freelancers, they remain invisible, and you can completely ignore them whenever you're drafting policies that might affect them. So a cynical person might say that's even intentional, because if you don't count somebody, you're denying them agency. You don't give them a statistical base on which they can argue, hi, we've got a case to make because we make up a certain proportion of the workforce. So we need to count freelancers better. Another demand, we need a voice. Freelancers need to be consulted anytime some kind of employment policy is drafted. And at the moment, this doesn't happen. If a government wants to create some kind of policy that affects freelancers, they have nobody to turn to ask, you know, what do you think of this idea? So we need to be there anytime a policy comes forward. And also outside of the realm of government, in terms of media and social awareness, anytime a story gets written in a newspaper that addresses the issue of employment, they need to be able to have someone to ask, you know, what do you think of this? Not just the unions, not just the governments, not just the bosses, but also the freelancers. What's their perspective on a certain issue? All right, so those are three really easy ones that I think everyone can kind of agree with, counting freelancers properly, recognizing them, and giving them a seat at the table. I want to move on to some more, I guess, ideological demands that might come up. These are probably more my opinion than the general movement as a whole, but let's have a look at them anyway. So freelancers need better protections, starting with something as simple as healthcare. If you're a freelancer in Germany, you pay far more for your healthcare than an employed person would. And not just because the employer pays half the costs, but in absolute terms, you also pay more. You pay anywhere between 300 and 700 euros a month. Now, that's just unfair. People should be charged the same healthcare rates regardless of whether you're a freelancer or whether you're a full-time employee, and regardless of whether your company pays half or not. So we just need equal healthcare costs. That's a pretty simple one. Why don't we think about the idea of introducing a freelancer Sozialkasse, kind of similar to the Künstler Sozialkasse we have here in Germany, which is now a bit of a fortress. If you're not in it, it's very difficult to get in. It's made for artists and only artists, and anybody else who doesn't quite fit into that category can't access this service, which is quite a good social service. If you're not familiar with it, the government pays a proportion of the artist's healthcare and retirement costs. Well, we need something similar like that for all freelancers, not just artists. This is an idea that's come from Australia. The unions in Australia are pushing for this, but it's very likely to get taken up because it's quite a controversial idea. But the idea of having a sort of publicly managed bank where workers can have transferable benefits stored, such as healthcare, sick benefits, retirement benefits, in a kind of centralized public bank. So the idea being that if you go between jobs, you don't lose your benefits. They stay with you. They follow you around from job to job. Well, we could have something similar like that for freelancers. Like I said, it's unlikely to get up in Australia, and it's a very expensive policy to put into place, which is why it's having so much opposition. But I think it's worth considering, particularly when you think about the way that a freelancer approaches life. They don't have any holidays, they don't have any sick days. If you are able to somehow store up credit points in a publicly managed bank each time you worked, even as a freelancer, that would certainly help reduce some of the uncertainty that you face in your daily life. So what this is all kind of heading towards is the idea of creating a really strong social safety net for freelancers. Because we're heading to a situation where the freelancing gray zone is being expanded for the benefit of the companies. And if we're going to do that, we have to take care of the people who are adversely affected by that transition. Because you just can't have half of the workforce living without healthcare or sick pay or any kind of security. Half the workforce is just too many people to exploit and ignore. We have to have a system where those people are taken care of. And that's going to involve taxation and wealth distribution. And some people aren't going to like that. But luckily, if we're also making up half the workforce, we're also going to have social and political clout. We're going to have some kind of power, as long as we find a way to come together and be cohesive and have a single voice. All right, so there's some of the potential demands. Oh, I'll actually end with this one, because this one I know is of interest to particularly a lot of people in this audience, which is the idea of the basic citizen's income. If you're not familiar with this idea, it's that we should have a single payment given to every citizen every month to help cover that covers their living costs, their basic living costs. Regardless of your income or your status, every citizen would receive a payment every month. Now, this would certainly go some way to providing the kind of security that we need for freelancers. Again, this is a very controversial idea, but it's got some rigorous academic and economic thinking behind it. And this could be a kind of endpoint that perhaps the freelancers movement could push for. But it's a long way off. All right, so there's some of the potential ideas of what a freelancer movement might try and fight for. So how can we actually achieve these things? Well, I'm going to run through quite quickly. I've just got to check the time. Yeah, I'm going to run through some of the potential tactics that the freelancers movement might like to use or could use in trying to grow from its current state, which is rather small and not particularly powerful, you know, small little organizations in different countries that are quite disconnected. How are we going to grow from that to some kind of mass movement that's going to represent the bulk of freelancers around the world? Well, let's have a look. Now, some of these tactics I've taken from the time that I've spent at working at startup companies. Until recently, I was the co-founder of a startup company in Berlin. So I'm quite aware of all the startup jargon that gets thrown around, and anyone who's been around this startup concept knows that there's plenty of jargon. In fact, that's all a startup is. It's a small company with, you know, way too much enthusiasm buried under a huge pile of cliches. But some of those cliches are actually, you know, usable, and we should maybe put some to use to actually promote the freelancers movement. So here's one of them. The minimal viable product, MVP. I'm sure some people in this room have heard of this one. This is the idea that you're meant to develop the simplest possible concept of an idea before developing the full service version of it. So you take any idea you've got and say, how can we develop this in the most straightforward, simple manner to see if it even works before we decide to put it in production? Well, we can use that as a movement, because there's going to be things we're developing, websites, campaigns, ideas, that if we apply this sort of startup logic, this sort of low-cost, low-budget logic, we might be able to produce it in a far more efficient way. Another couple of buzzwords, A-B testing and UX testing. Now, A-B testing, of course, is the idea that that if you've got two versions of a thing, you put it out to see which of the versions that the market takes up the most. So for instance, the most famous example of A-B testing comes from the Obama campaign in 2007, where they A-B tested two different versions of the website to see which one resulted in higher take-up rates, higher sign-ups, and higher donations. So it turns out the one on the right with the black and white photo and the words "learn more" was it resulted in 40% more sign-ups than the one on the left, which had the word "sign up" and the blue photograph. You can also do this, of course, with email mailouts, test subject lines and to see which one actually provokes the reaction that you want to get. So we can use this kind of idea as well. We can use data-driven, rational ideas of simplification in implementing our campaign ideas. We can apply startup logic to what we're doing as a social movement. Okay, here's another idea from the startup world. And these ideas, the next two ideas are more about after you've got a bit of user growth, engaging your users, which is something we as a movement are going to need to do. So here's one thing that the startup world stumbled upon, the idea of the ambassador. Now, believe it or not, startup companies have somehow managed to convince their users that they're cool enough that people actually volunteer their time to work for them for free, which I think is ridiculous, but it happens. There are some users of some websites who think the website is so cool that they spend their time on things like chat forums, helping out other users, or they go around putting up stickers, and these people are called ambassadors. And in some cases, these ambassadors even fight for each other to be the top ambassador in any particular city. Now remember, this is a for-profit company that actually makes money off these people, and they work for them for free. Now, if a startup company can convince their users to do that, then surely we as a social movement, with a noble goal like trying to protect and improve the condition of freelancers, should be able to do something similar. Perhaps we need to find ambassadors in every city to go out and promote the cause of the freelancers movement. So another one is the idea of the meetup. If you think it's crazy that you can get one person to go around and put up your stickers, imagine that some startups actually get small groups of people in different cities to come together once a month to meet up for a drink to talk about how cool their startup is. So that's the idea of the meetup. It happens, lots of different websites use this tactic, and it's very effective because once you've got people meeting together in one place talking about you, you build brand loyalty, you can start word of mouth promotion. Well, we as a movement can use this idea. We can have startups of the freelancers movement in every city. And we're doing this in Germany with the VGSD. We have startups, we have little meetups. And as I said, there's one happening in Berlin and at the end of this month. All right, some ideas from the startup world about how we're going to grow. So my next little set of tactics, they're roughly called swarm tactics, and they come from this man here, Rick Falkvinger, who is one of the founders of the Pirate Party in Sweden, and he's writing a book currently called Swarmwise, which is a fantastic book. It basically gives away the secrets of how to start any kind of social movement. And he's got a couple of key tips, which I'll go through quickly. The first one is you've got to define your goal, make it really clear. You've got to state what your cause is and get people to get behind it. So our cause is we want to protect and improve freelancers around the world. Once you've stated your goal, you've got to look at the way people are able to access your movement. You've got to have really low barriers to entry. The first time anyone hears about the movement, they've got to be able to join straight away. And so one idea that I've thought of for the freelancers movement is that perhaps we should use technology to help this along. So perhaps we can develop some kind of smartphone app that members have on their phone, and anytime they're talking to somebody else about the freelancers movement and the person shows interest, instead of saying, I'll send you a link, they can get out their little phone, open the app and say, well, why don't you sign up right now? We can use these little kind of technical tricks and ideas to increase the membership. So the next swarm tactic is instant activation. As soon as somebody has showed interest and signed up on any level, give them something to do. Because if you do something straight away, you feel invested in the movement and you're more likely to stay involved. So we could put this to use quite simply too by giving all people who've just signed up some kind of really small, easy task for them to do, like send a tweet or put up a poster or something really basic. And I envisage that maybe we can have a kind of ticker board, a list of really small tasks that sit there waiting to be done. The first time anyone arrives at the website, they'll see something they can do and they can jump in and do it, and suddenly they're part of the movement. All right, there's some swarm tactics. Rick Falkving has got a whole bunch more fantastic, interesting tactics, and I really encourage anyone to read his blog where he's publishing them all. All right, the next tactic is a pretty obvious one, to use social media. Now, this sounds obvious, but still it's not done correctly. A lot of times that people try and launch movements or try and get things done, usually because they try and use social media mainly as a microphone to tell people what they're saying or what they're doing or what they're thinking. Rather, I think we should use it as a way to really drive up membership and drive up interest, and also to build positive pressure and negative pressure on companies that are exploiting freelancers. As I told you back when I was talking to you about the Precarious Workers Brigade in the UK, they use social media to name and shame companies that are exploiting interns. There's a lot of power in it. So that's the Precarious Workers Brigade. They're trying to encourage people to not work for free. So I think we also need to learn from the enemy, and the enemy here being companies that are exploiting freelancers. Now, they're using some tactics that we could actually use to our own advantage as well. For instance, I'm sure some of you have heard of Amazon's Mechanical Turk, which is a platform that companies use to chop up big tasks into tiny little micro tasks, and they farm them out across the world, and they get people to do these tasks for a couple of cents each. And it's terribly exploitative, there's a lot of bad things to say about this kind of approach, but we could also use something similar for our own advantage. So for instance, as a movement, we're going to have a lot of work to do. We're going to have a lot of campaigns to run and reports to write and things to translate. Well, we could break that down and distribute that across our member base and get it done really quickly by our users for our own benefit. Similarly, we can make use of the crowd of the freelancers that are going to be taking part in the movement. Because if you think about it, freelancers are some of the brightest, most creative people out there. That's why they get hired by companies to run their campaigns. Well, surely we can put those minds to work for our benefit as well. Okay, clever graphic design. I mentioned this one earlier as well. The Freelancers Union in the US does a really good job of capturing people's attention by using catchy images and graphic design. And that's important because freelancers are creative people and they will respond to creative things that are visually stimulating. And again, luckily, we have lots of creative graphic designers inside our own freelance community, so it won't be hard to find somebody who's able to design a really catchy poster or a billboard or whatever the mean and whatever's needed. So now we're getting into more long-term ideas about how we're going to actually make a change in society for the benefit of freelancers. And this is lobbying and institution building. Now, as any politically educated person knows, today the way politics works is through lobbying. Companies employ huge armies of lobbyists who go and buddy up to politicians in capital cities all over the world to get right model legislation and get what they want. Well, we're going to have to learn to play this game as well. And one element of the freelancers movement is actually doing this currently. It's the UK-based group called the PCG, the Professional Contractors Group. They've been around for about 10 years and they have about 20,000 members, so they're doing quite well. And they actually employ two full-time political lobbyists, one of whom comes from the Conservative Party. And it's their job to pick up the phone and call up government ministers and their aides and tell them what freelancers think. We've got to start learning to play this game. Similarly, institution building. As it's pretty apparent, we live in a world that's run by neoliberal policies, and that didn't happen by accident. That happened because many decades ago, some smart people realized that the way to influence democratic society is by creating these institutions, things like the Heritage Foundation and the Cato Institute in the US, which produce reports and send out, they're think tanks, and they send out experts and intellectuals to go on talk shows and to spread the opinion about neoliberal policies. So that's a real long-term play, but we need to start thinking about the idea of creating institutions that are supportive of freelancers as well. We can use positive pressure. We don't have to wait to build institutions. We can start right now by encouraging companies to start treating their freelancers fairly. We can come up with some kind of freelance-friendly tag that we give to companies that have demonstrated that they're employing freelancers on a fair basis. We can also use negative pressure to get companies to do what we want, using ideas of blockades, boycotts, and strikes. Now, this is quite a long-term vision. But imagine if we can actually harness enough people together to actually pull off a freelancer's strike that actually affects a business enough to make them change their practices. It's kind of hard to imagine, but if you've ever read any of Cory Doctorow's work, he's written a book called For the Win, where he envisages this happening in the world of online gold farming or game playing. It's not the most far-fetched idea, particularly if we are actually going to come to make up 50% of the workforce, then we really will have the opportunity to do some damage to a company that's trying to exploit freelancers. So really long-term strategy ideas. And this is the final one, use co-working spaces. This is the one that that I think really could be the secret that's going to make the freelancers movement work. My background is that I used to work for a startup that was involved in co-working spaces, and that's how I became aware of the whole issue of the freelancers movement, or the need for a freelancers movement. Now, co-working spaces are an incredibly powerful network. There's over 2,000 of them around the world right now, and each of them are home to several hundred freelancers, and they have very big communication channels. Now, co-working spaces are the places we're going to use as the physical nodes in the network for the freelancers movement. It's where we're going to put up the posters and host the meetings. It's how we're going to spread the word about what's going on. And I'll link this back to a bit of a historical anecdote. There's some thought that the American civil rights movement was successful in the US because it was able to tap into the network of black churches. So when they wanted to spread word about a bus boycott, they were able to do that from the pulpit of of the preacher at a black church, and then all over the country, and this is really effective. Now, I don't want to kind of make an analogy between the civil rights movement and what we're trying to achieve as freelancers. They're completely different things, but I think we can take the analogy up in so far as that we can use the idea of having physical spaces that already exist as the basis for what we want to do. So we're going to start doing this already in Spain. A couple of weeks ago, I was in Spain talking at the co-working conference there. And afterwards, a few of the co-working space operators got together and decided we need to do this. We have to start the movement in Spain. And the way they're going to do it is in October, they're going to host a nationwide freelance day of action where every co-working space is going to host a meetup. They're going to invite all the freelancers from their community and from all the surrounding area to come together for a meetup in every co-working space. They're going to be asked to create a list of their top 10 problems and their top 10 solutions, and that's going to become the agenda for the Spanish freelancers movement. All right, so there's some tactics. So I've given you a little bit of an overview of what the freelancer movement is, where it's happening, the kind of demands that we might have, and some of the tactics that we can use to achieve the things that we want. Now, I just want to go quickly through and acknowledge that there are some criticisms of what we're trying to do here. And the first is, of course, that we live in a globalized world where there's some things that are impossible to reverse, particularly the flow of labor and the flow of information and the flow of money across borders. This is going to make it really difficult to enact any kind of change on a national level, because if we're able to make some kind of improvements in protections here, they may well be lost because other countries have far looser regulations. That's going to be a problem. I'm not sure how we're going to address that, but we should acknowledge it. It shouldn't stop us from pushing ahead anyway, but it is something to think about. I can already see from the outset, while observing the freelancers movement, that there are some kind of potential splits. Not every freelancer is the same. Some are very well off, some are doing very well, and they don't particularly need much support. They don't want any kind of further regulation or protection. They want lower taxation. And then you've got people at the other end of the spectrum who aren't doing very well, who need more support, who would want more regulation and more protection for what they're doing. So somehow we've got to marry these two different interests in one movement. Not only that, but the different groups involved in the freelancers movement also have different ideological outlooks. I've already told you my ideas about what I think the freelancers movement should fight for, but other groups involved have a far more neoliberal approach. They want to make it more possible for people to be freelancers. They want to increase the number of freelancers and reduce the amount of regulation that gets in the way of freelancing. I tend to believe that that's going to happen by itself anyway, so we don't really need it to help it along. But in any case, we're going to have these different groups with these different ideas about what is good for freelancers. And we may see in the future that there's going to be some kind of splits. But again, I don't think that should stop us pushing ahead now with trying to have a united voice, at least to get recognition and a voice in the political sphere. What about unions? This is another criticism I sometimes hear. Isn't this a job that the trade unions should be doing? And in some cases, trade unions do have units that are trying to focus on freelancers. But in answer to this, I would say there's two responses. The first is that unions haven't done a good job of representing freelancers, particularly here in Germany. When the Rentenversicherung fight happened last year, unions were nowhere to be seen. I don't think they even were aware that it happened. It was up to the freelancers to get organized to make it happen. And if they hadn't done that, that legislation would have gone through, and today we would have all been paying 400 euros a month compulsory tax for our retirement. So the unions haven't been effective in the past. And they haven't even been very effective at their own game in protecting their own user bases. You know, the amount of union membership is dropping considerably worldwide. So rather than wait for unions to catch up, I would say let's go ahead and create a movement without them. And if they want to join in later, then great. The final criticism that I often hear is from freelancers themselves, particularly those who are doing quite well. They say, well, I'm getting paid all right. I've got a pretty good position in life. I don't need any help. Although there's those who say, I've got it all sorted out. Good luck with your freelancers movement. It sounds like a very noble cause, but you know, I'm sure someone will benefit from it, but I don't really need any help right now. Well, in answer to this, I would say, I think it's pretty obvious that we all have something to gain by coming together and making a collective demand, whether you're doing well or whether you're not. And to those at the top of the freelancing game, I should also point out that if we have a look at what big business does, big businesses don't stop when they get to the top of their game. They continually form lobby groups to argue for more relaxations in taxation. They argue for more support from the government. So big businesses realize that you've got to keep striving ahead even when you're at the top of the game. So freelancers should as well. Even if you're doing very well, there's always You have to solidify your position and strengthen your position. So coming together in a freelancers movement makes a lot of sense no matter where you are in the freelancing spectrum. Okay, so I've given you a bit of an overview of what's going on with the freelancers movement, the goals, the aims, the tactics, and some of the criticisms. So hopefully I've at least inspired you to want to get involved. And if I have, please head to the VGSD website to sign up. This is the German element of the freelancers movement. And we need your support and your ideas, particularly from on a technology point of view. A lot of the things that I've discussed today involve the creation of websites or systems, and we need support, we need ideas, and we need people who can actually carry out the work. And we need to build it in a way that makes sense as well from the ground up. We shouldn't be designing and creating these tools and then having to rebuild them later. So we need support now at the founding stage. And in a couple of weeks' time, hopefully I will have consolidated all these ideas into what's going to become the ebook, Independence Unite, Inside the Freelancers Rights Movement. So keep an eye on that website if you want to have a read of any of the things that I've been talking about today. So thanks very much. I'm happy to take questions. Does anyone have any questions?
It's a very interesting talk and interesting idea indeed. And as being as a freelancer for nearly 12 years now, I would like to say it sounds a bit like reinventing the wheel since other organizations come along which are doing right the same way we're doing. For instance, on the consultancy level, even by acquiring new projects, you have to walk around and ask the other guys and to work. So co-working is an issue itself. Or for instance, like the Kreditreform Verband, where you can be a member and then get information about how difficult it may be to work with some customers. That's one question. So how do you interact with the older ones? And the other one is, I think the day is perfect. What I would like to say is, I think that a little bit, it's dangerous to engage too much when I said, hey, you're going to organize strikes against my company. I don't will book you. And so you may be, as you said, enemy. So how to avoid that?
Well, the idea of working with existing structures and organizations, I think, makes a lot of sense. The way I see the freelancers movement developing is not as a single organization, but as a kind of umbrella collective of lots of different organizations that work together for the same goal. I don't think we'll ever have one single body that will be the freelancers' representational body. We're going to have a very wide umbrella of movements. And so there are existing structures. What I have noticed is that the things that exist today, a lot of them are more focused on providing skills and training to freelancers. So there's different bodies that you can join where you can get tips on how to do your tax and, you know, but the idea of actually having a political voice is something that's quite new. And that hasn't really been attempted before. And that's what, especially in Germany. And I also see that the potential that we'll have different groups in the same country. That already happens in France. There's two different bodies representing freelancers. And I don't see that as a problem at all. I think that the more voices, the better, as long as at some point we try and find some level to be cohesive at.
Do you know German ASU? ASU? This is in German a Familienunternehmen, Eigentümer, Unternehmer.
Okay.
So they are something like you want to do, but it's a problem if you are working maybe freelance for 12 years, you want to found a GmbH, something like this, would be also, this be something for you? Because I think the ASU has had a very good lobbying, and the boss of them, I know him, he is sitting more time in Berlin than in his own company. The other Geschäftsführer, he's doing the whole business, he needs an interim manager, maybe it's a good job for me, I'm looking for, but it's very nice, but I think we could unite not with the unions, the Gewerkschaften. It's not too good in Germany, I think. But maybe with the ASU. Can you comment on this?
Well, yeah, I think there's lots of different elements in society that do exist already that can be harnessed for the benefit of the freelancers in general. I think that the approach, though, hasn't been tried before, where we're actually focusing on improving freelancers' conditions specifically. I have noticed there are lots of groups, and in Germany, of course, is the land of the Verbande. You know, there's millions of Verbands for everything, including freelancers now, of course, too. And there's going to be some crossover, but I don't see that as a negative at all. And I think the more of these groups that we can get together to make some kind of united demands, the better. And Germany's a bit of a standout in that case, because most other countries have nothing at all. So.
In fact, I've got two questions and one remark. So my first question, the BDSG,
yes.
Since this is a hacker conference, I wonder, is this an organization focused on IT issues, or is it more generic about freelancers?
It's general, it's very open. So all freelancers, yes.
All right, now I forgot my second question. The remark I wanted to make, you said something about trade unions. In my opinion, it's not only my opinion, it's a fact. Trade unions lose members more and more every year. So my opinion, it's rather hopeless trying to cooperate with trade unions, because if you do that, you will be regarded as someone backward oriented, and it will have a rather negative effect.
I completely agree with you. The point I was making was that I agree that trade unions have proven ineffective, and even those that have attempted to represent freelancers haven't done so in an effective way at all. So rather than wait for them, we should push ahead with our ideas of a movement, and if they come up later, if they want to join in the party later, okay, but we shouldn't sit around waiting for the trade unions to pick up this cause, because they're not doing it and they won't do it. So I agree with you.
Next question.
Hi. Not wanting to come on full frontal criticism, but it's quite, I find myself quite a whiny bunch. Because as a freelancer, you know what you sign up for, as in you will have no sick days, you will have no paid vacation. That's why you make a pile of cash as a backup, so you can say, well, I can take it slow now for 2 weeks. That's one. Two, I don't know the German situation. I'm from Belgium. I didn't know about that action myself. Is that I do pay social security, and at multiple case a month, actually, no, sorry, a quarter, correction. Meaning that I pay social security, I get the same level as any normal employee would. Not that I use it, but well, that's what sharing in a system is for. So maybe I find it easy with that side. Well, it's not working in Germany, hence it's not working in Europe. I find that a little bit cutting corners.
Well, to your first point, the well-paid freelancer. Yes, many freelancers are currently well paid, and particularly I would imagine those at this conference, because if you're in the technology game, then you're going to be well paid no matter whether you're a freelancer or whether you're on a full-time contract. But that's not the case for the majority of freelancers. And I've seen some data recently, particularly from Germany, that shows that the average self-employed person is earning far less than the average employed person. So there are some at the very top of the game who are doing well, and you're right, they go into it knowing they're going to come out of it better. But more and more people are becoming freelancers, whether they like it or not. And as that market increases, the people are going to start getting paid less and less. And we already see that. There's websites where you have to compete with other people for your job, you know, and the lowest bidder always wins. Or you've got these task farming websites, or websites like 99designs, where you have to upload a completely submitted portfolio of a particular graphic design job before you even know if you're going to be picked. So it's not the case that everyone's doing well. Those who go into it with their eyes wide open, knowing that they're going to come out of it better off, sure, they're doing all right. But we have to keep in mind that this is a changing work world, and as the years go on, more people are going to find themselves in the unfortunate position of being at the bottom end of the market, whether they like it or not. The kid coming out of high school today most likely will never have a full-time job. They'll go from one contract to the next, and the idea of a career has passed them by. They wouldn't even consider it possible that they could have a full-time job. There's going to be a whole generation coming forward of people who, you know, the idea of the job security is just gone. So to say that it's a choice, I think, is it might be true today, but it certainly won't be true in the future. Your second point was about German. How you're getting, you pay a lot of tax and that, no.
I have, I'm paying my normal social security, what my employer would pay for me, but I'm paying it out of my own pocket, of course.
Yep.
So it's not working in Germany, it's not working anywhere else.
No, that's right. And there's a bit of an irony in this, in that governments are trying to make it easier for people to be freelancers because it's good for companies. But at the same time, they're also squeezing freelancers really badly with taxes and regulations. So freelancers are getting squeezed on both sides. So on one hand, they're trying to fight off government regulation and taxation. And at the same time, the governments are making it more easy for people to fall into that category. So there's a lot to struggle against, and there'll be even more in the future. And you're right, you've got to pay your own taxes and your own social security. And of course, all members of society have to. I don't think the argument should be that freelancers don't have to pay their fair share of society's costs. But it should be done in a way that's more equitable. So rather than having a flat tax on freelancers of 400 euros a month, like Ursula von der Leyen wanted to do, it should be progressive based on how much you earn. Because some months you might not earn anything at all. Or some months you might earn, you know, 5,000 euros from a contract. And at that point, you should be able to pay more into the system. But these concepts, they need to be more tailored to the realistic idea of what it's like to live as a freelancer month to month, never really knowing what your conditions are going to be.
Okay, I don't want to hug the microphone, so I'll have one follow-up, and then we'll surely discuss this afterwards. Is that, first of all, not every self-employed one person is a freelancer. I get the thing that you put it all on one pile, which it is not. Also, if you're not paying, if you're not making enough money to pay the bills, you have to stop doing it and start rewarding yourself. For instance, I myself did photography as well. I quit because people were asking, well, you can do this and this and this for free, and we'll mention your name. And I said, well, no, you don't. And I just stepped out of that business specifically for that reason. So, stop being helpless and act yourself. That's why I became a freelancer, because I was tired of all the crap. But we'll discuss this, I guess, among the two of us later, because I don't want to hug the microphone. Next one.
Sure. There's big campaigns for getting people not to work for free. You see them doing the rounds a lot on social media these days. Don't work for free. It's a mantra that's being picked up a lot lately. Anybody else? No?
Any last question?
Last question? Oh, one over here, making you run.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, I have a question. I hope I'm able to explain this correctly. In the Netherlands, there's something like a citizen number, burger service number. It basically used to be the case only as a social security number, but nowadays, as an equally a comparable number is used for many, many government services. So not just for tax things, but also for public transport and hospitals and medical care, etc. Now, what is the case? Freelancers, they have to use that exact number, which is basically very, very private, to have contact with customers of them. So a number that is being tied to their individual, to them as a person, very private, they have to give out to their clients, and they also have to put it out in public, for example, on their website. So it's really strange. Now, there was a meeting of the Chamber of Commerce a few months ago that I attended, and I spoke about the problem and asked the question, how can this be that a government number, which is issued by the government, is very private, is also at the same time forcefully used by freelancers and then given out in the public? It's very contradictive. So A, does it sound familiar to you? And B, do you have any opinion about the answer that the person at this meeting gave, that it was a European legislation, that that number should be used for by freelancers in this scenario?
I don't know particularly, but if you do have a concern about it, I would encourage you. The Netherlands has one of the strongest freelancers organizations. It's called the PZO. Professional Selbstständige Unter, I can't remember what it's called. PZO, they're a very strong organization, and they've managed to have a lot of really great achievements in the Netherlands. Particularly, they've got the recognition of freelance status in a lot of areas of government, like I was talking about. And I'm sure they would be happy to take up the issue. So I really encourage you to seek out the PZO and join up. They're one of the leaders of the freelance movement for sure.
Okay. Yeah. One small thing I might add. There's of course a big risk in this number because it's so private and so sensitive. People should keep it for themselves, except when actually needed to be used. The risk, of course, is if freelancers are forced to put it out in the public, then you get the risk of identity fraud and those kind of things.
And then you in the Netherlands, you have some of the highest rates of freelancing too. I mean, I know it takes into account lots of other self-employed people, but I think you've got something like 40% of the workforce being freelance already. So yeah, you've got a good base on which to make an argument if it's negatively affecting those people, that's for sure.
Thanks.
Yeah. So come and talk to me afterwards if you'd like to find out more or get involved. And also, if you know of a couch that's free tonight, please let me know. Thanks very much.